Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 222, I was very lucky to have Megan McLaren. And unfortunately, not related to anyone in the McLaren racing team. But she is a fantastic individual. She is a registered social worker, behavioral health consultant, clinical educator, and a life coach. She's basically helping people create a life they love. We talked about many things on the podcast today. We basically talked about her, like her having her twin daughters, and what was that like in the sort of start of the her pandemic, and the sort of challenges which came up from that. We also talked about, yes, even though like social workers and people who are life coaches do talk about helping people, they're not really sometimes practitioners in it themselves, and some of the challenges she faced to overcome over that period of time. And yeah, basically we talked about a whole lot more, and like, yeah, the time management of managing two twins, two step kids and a husband, as well as working a job and a new business. It is mad. Ha, it's a joy to speak to her. I look forward to speaking to her again. So sit back, enjoy the podcast, and yeah, enjoy the show. Peace. Oh, no. Hey, go. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 222, all the twos in the house. I'm very lucky to have a Megan McLaren, no relation to a very famous race car company in the UK, but that's another story. She is a registered social worker, behavioral consultant, clinical educator, life coach, and basically she's helping people to find to create a life they love. All in all, she is a mother of two adorable little twins. How are you today?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you for that introduction. I know it was a mouthful, but I wear many hats, so I'm happy that you hit all of them. And I'm so excited to be here. Love your energy. It's so infectious. You're invigorating me. Now I'm excited.
There you go. Look, I'm not like one. I'm sure I'll touch on your other sort of set of skills a la TikTok, but that's another story. But like, this is the thing. You, my lady, how can I say, you have had a rather busy, intense 2 years. Like, you're a clinical, like, yeah, you're a registered social worker, which you've been doing for how many years?
Over 8 years. I think I'm coming up to 9 right away. Yeah, I lose track, honestly.
Right. And life coach, like, yeah, behavioral, like, health consultant, clinical educator. And you decided to, like, you know what? Hey, you know, having one kid, that's simple.
That's pretty. Right. Why not?
I'm going to have two at the same time during the global pandemic. Mm-hmm. How, like, all of that juggling, how did that sort of parenthood and then, like, kind of, you found out the magical moment it was twins take you? I'm curious about that at this present time.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, so when I found out I was having twins, my husband wasn't even at the appointment, because I'm such a pragmatist that I thought, well, why would you come to the appointment? Don't take time off work. I'll just go. I'll get it done. It's a regular checkup. They're just going to confirm you're pregnant, right? And my husband was like, are you sure? I mean, I think I should be there. I'm like, ah, don't bother. Because for him to take the time off work, it would have been like a whole day. So I was there by myself, gabbing away to the technician. And I had actually just been there not long prior, because I actually thought that maybe I couldn't get pregnant. And then I had the same technician this go around. So he even remembered me. He's like, weren't you just here?
Exactly.
I'm like, yeah, well, funny story, right? Like, funny story. I thought maybe I couldn't get pregnant. Now I am pregnant. So I'm just here for you to confirm that I am pregnant. And he goes, well, do you want to hear something even funnier? And I'm looking at him and not the screen as they're scanning me, right? And I'm like, sure. He's like, well, it's twins. And I was stunned. I think I actually swore. And I was in shock. I was in absolute shock. And I looked at the screen and it was clear as day, you know, two little tiny babies. And then, of course, you know, tears of joy, because to go from thinking I couldn't have children to now being blessed with two children. I mean, what a gift. I was completely elated. But then it set into me that, oh, my gosh, now how am I going to tell my husband this? He works like hundreds of feet up in the air. So I was not about to call him at work and tell him it was twins. So I had to wait the entire day until I got home so I could make sure he was safe and, you know, not about to fall off a ladder before I told him.
Wait, like when, like, okay, I like he, like your husband sounds like he's the, how can I put it, the sensible one out of the two of you. He's like just saying, like, he's like, yeah, I should have been there, and like talking to his boys, and like, yeah, he comes home expecting like, okay, how was it, everything like this.
Yeah,
what was his reaction when you went, hey?
Yeah. So, you know, I couldn't formulate the words. I didn't know what to say to him. I had run through every possible scenario. And so I thought to myself, I'm just going to give him the pictures and we'll see if he can make sense of it. So that's what I did. I said, you know, here you go. And I slid the laptop over to him because they gave me a little CD with the sonogram pictures. And he's looking at it and he's looking at me and he's like, I don't know what I'm looking at. And I said, well, just keep looking, you know, keep going through the pictures. And I could just see his face like, am I seeing this clearly? Because they labeled it like twin one, twin two. So he kind of stuttered a bit like, what? Why is there two? I said, well, because there's two. So I think he was like, okay, don't freak out. Don't freak out. But he was excited too, and in absolute shock. I actually still have I have the recording on my phone now, and it's so funny to watch back because he just kind of laughed in shock. exactly.
Oh my god, that, because like, this is the thing. Now I have seen, how can I put it, I have seen many a friend now who's had their kids and stuff like this. I haven't joined that club, and if, like, when that day comes, God help me. But like, this is the thing, like, many a time I've seen when this the joy of parenthood comes to like these people, it's like the first child is like, hey, chill, relaxed, sane. The other one is, for, how can I put this, feral, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Now, with twins, just out of curiosity, are they the same personality kind of, or is one ultra chill and the other one's a little bit
feral? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the better words. Mm-hmm. Let's just say excitable. Let's go with that.
And they were like that in the womb. Like, one of my daughters, we called her Speedy Gonzalez in the womb because she was always kicking, moving, like, just putting me through the ringer. My other daughter was so chill and quiet and never moved, to the point that one day I was actually scared because I hadn't felt her. So I went to the hospital just to make sure that everything was fine. And they're like, oh, yeah, she's fine. She's just, yeah, she's just hanging out. She's just sleeping. And they came out the exact same way. So if you hear someone screaming in the background, it's my daughter, Ava.
Okay.
Bouncing off the walls. And my other daughter, Madison, just sings and is water off a duck's back. And yeah,
like, I tell you one like little quirk of a thing, one of my best boys, yeah, he had a daughter back in September. Guess what the daughter's name is?
What?
Ava.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah,
Ava's my grandmother's name, so it has special meaning. But yeah, I love that name. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I've got to say, like, it, with regards to, like, yeah, having twins, which is a challenge in itself, but with regards to everything what sort of went on, because 2019 is when they came into the world, and then basically 2020 hit like a sledgehammer. everywhere around the world.
Yeah.
Like, with regards to everything that went on, did you have that sort of same network of support you'd normally have? Or was it a case of, okay, what did you have to sort of delve into to sort of help get you through that
first
2 years, you know?
So my daughters were born in October of 2019, right? And then the pandemic hit maybe 4 months later. And so 2020 was an incredibly difficult year for me, not just being a new mom, but being a new mom in the pandemic.
Mm.
And because I had twins, they were born premature, which is pretty common for twins, but they had a bit of a stay in the NICU. And so that then compounded with the pandemic, actually kind of sent me into postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. So it was a very difficult year for me. And then I spent, 2021 doing the work to come out of that. And that's how I evolved into creating my own private life coaching company, because I essentially wanted to create the resources that I didn't have. Mm. Because I live in a province in Canada where I don't have any family here. So my mom is over 12 hours away from me. And so, it was just me and my husband trying to sift through parenthood. And mm-hmm. I have two stepsons. So my husband has two sons as well. So we were trying to manage a family of four children and then, trying to manage my own mental health. So it was, very difficult.
Right. Like, this is the thing, with postpartum depression, building blocks to get into place to sort of help get you out. What would you say was was there an epiphanal moment, or was it a series of moments where you were like going, okay, you know what? Come on, pick yourself mm-hmm. up. Or was mm-hmm. it someone like coming up to you going, hey, it'll be okay?
Yeah. So there was a pivotal moment in terms of me saying, okay, this is enough, because that came right around my girl's first birthday. It was just coming up to them turning one. And I think like any mother, when they come up to their kid's first birthday, they're kind of reflecting on the year that's just flown by. And it was really emotional for me to reflect on the year, because there wasn't a lot of joy in the year, because that's what postpartum depression and anxiety does. It takes away those moments of joy. It takes away from you being able to be present with your children.
Mm.
Because I was so riddled with anxiety that I couldn't be present with them. I was constantly thinking about, well, how they eaten, how they slept, when do they need to sleep? Oh my gosh, I have to do laundry. I have to take my other kids to hockey. I just was constantly projecting into the future or living in the past, because their birth was very traumatic for me. I had an emergency C-section.
Wow.
And so coming up to their first birthday, and when I reflected upon that, I just felt so slighted. I felt like that year was stolen from me. And so I just said, enough is enough. I have to do something to address this. Clearly my attempt at trying to control everything is not working. And so the first thing I did was I reached out for some professional therapy, and that was incredibly helpful. But probably the most impactful thing that I did is I just started putting myself on my agenda of to do, right? I was never on my agenda to do. I never took care of myself. I wouldn't even change my clothes someday because I was so wrapped up in being the perfect mother for my children, making sure they were in the adorable clean outfit and being fed and bathed and doing everything I thought I should be. But none of that included anything for myself.
Yeah, I can imagine. How old, I have to ask this question just so it sort of plays in my mind. How old are your stepchildren?
My stepchildren are teenagers, but when my girls were born, they were 13 and 15, and now they're 15 and 17.
Yeah, no, because you think it, I look at that, and because, okay, if it was a case of they were sort of, they're at that age, they've got a lot of activities. If they were a little bit younger, activities would be going out of the wazoo. And mm-hmm. when you're dealing with two kids of an older age, they've got their social lives and stuff like this, which kind of would put on hold slightly because of the pandemic, but it's still got to school.
Yeah.
Are you doing your schoolwork? Is this going on? Is that going on? And like, you're going with all that type of go with them. But when you're talking about two babies, twins, I can only imagine what, like, sort of, not the like the time you blink and it's gone by the time, like if it's a time where you're trying to get one kid, like one of them to sleep and the other one's not cooperating, right. Like, you know what I mean?
That's totally how it was.
I can only imagine. Like, I remember having one of my boys over here with his family. They came and stayed with us, and like the little, like his youngest, he, like if he didn't have his mother next to him, he was not going to sleep for Jack Adam. And it was just like, you've been doing this now for 2 hours. Okay, I looked at her, and she was like, dead to the wind. I can only imagine what it must have been like for you. Not the easiest thing. And like the other thing, because you're like a registered social worker, was it hard to actually, like, you know what I mean, like swallow a little bit of pride and go, you know what, I need help?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think my ego played a big part in that, because I had a fantastic pregnancy. Even though my pregnancy was high risk, I was so elated to be pregnant. I didn't care. Like, I didn't care if I was in pain. I didn't care if I was tired. I loved being pregnant. And so given that experience and given my educational background, I never thought postpartum depression would happen to me at all. I thought I had all the tools to prevent it. It doesn't really matter. You know, there's hormonal imbalances happening and the birth experience happening. And so you can't control every aspect of it. And so I thought that I could, you know, talk myself out of it. I thought I could positive reframe myself out of it, kind of counsel myself out of it. But, you know, just some of my own personality traits played into that, because I'm a high achiever. I mean, look at all the titles that I have, right? I'm a perfectionist by nature. I'm a type A personality by nature. I want everything to be a certain way, but that actually bit me in the butt, because, you know, new motherhood is not predictable. You have to be able to bend and move and be flexible, but I didn't want to be flexible. I wanted my children to sleep when I wanted them to sleep and eat when I wanted them to eat. But yeah, babies don't care.
No, like, this is the thing. I think when it comes to like, I think the one thing what comes crystal clear to anyone who's become a parent, that perfection is not a thing. And if you're trying to be a mighty oak in like the sort of winds of what like one small child can do, let alone two small children, and yes, another two children from like, yeah, stepchildren, you got to be that sort of flexible reed in some regards, or you, like, it breaks people. And I don't think people realize that, or they're willing to acknowledge that, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, that was one of my biggest blessings that came out of this experience is that I learned how to be flexible. I learned how to adapt. And so even just today, you know, with my work schedule, things have come up, other things have dropped off the wayside. And, you know, 3 years ago, that would have sent me into a tailspin of anxiety. And now I've learned how to pivot so well, and I've learned how to manage my anxiety so well, that it's so much better. You know, if you're kind of scaling it, I used to always be kind of 9 out of 10 anxious. Now it's like very rarely passing a 5. And so just before coming onto this call with you, right, I had some things kind of pop up for me. And so I just took a moment to kind of take some deep breaths and make myself a cup of tea, like you saw, and pivot. Yeah.
The power of the pivot. It must be quite refreshing to you, like, discovering this, because, like, yeah, being able to pivot, to be able to go, okay, yeah, this is not that important, but this is at this moment in time. Let me take care of this and make that happen in the best possible way. With all of this going on, like, yeah, two kids, like two twins, which you brought into the world, being a stepmother and stuff like this. And yes, a registered social worker for 8 years. I worked, like, look, the reason why I bring that, the reason why I kind of reiterating this is each one of these sort of stages is not what I call light work, because the sort of day-to-day rigors of being a social worker can't be easy. And like trying to like carrying that weight and trying to put that down at the end of the day can't be the easiest mission at all. Correct me if I'm wrong, you know?
No, you're absolutely right. You know, I deal with some really heavy things some days. You know, I talk to patients who are either wanting to end their life or have tried to end their life. And some of the phone calls that I have with people are really, really heavy. And 3 years ago, I used to maybe get off a phone call like that and then just kind of dive into, you know, stepmotherhood or dive into the next task or get into my car to go get groceries and not even give myself a moment to process my day. And then wonder why I used to feel tight in my chest or wonder why I wasn't having restful sleep, because you can't power through those emotions. You know, you have to stop and process it and allow yourself to feel it and then do something to actually kind of cope and manage it. And so I didn't have those same processes in my life then, which is incredibly ironic given the fact that I was telling everybody else to do that, you know, telling everybody else to take care of themselves and practice self-care and drop the dishes and go and exercise or, you know, take care of their mental health. But I wasn't doing it for myself, because sometimes we have this expectation that because we have this experience or educational background that we should be able to function up here, right? Like we should be able to manage things better than I guess the general population. But I'm a human too, you know, I have needs too. And when we start to really recognize that, that's when we actually step into a place of power in the way that we manage our mental health.
Yeah, because like this is the thing, I look at people who like, okay, who are there to help others. Like they are, like when they are actually dishing out advice and everything like this, they're more like an academic. They're a teacher at that present time, but they're not truly a practitioner in what they've actually do. It's like, right. So yeah, you guys, I'm sorry, but you kinds are sometimes the worst for this type of thing, because it's like, yes, you teach, you educate, you like inform, which is like wonderful. It's brilliant. And like, you know what I mean? You help so many people like that, but you seldom are practitioners in what you actually teach. And I think sometimes that, I think many people forget this, or they don't actually see it or understand that. I could be wrong in saying that, but you tell me, you know?
Yeah. You know, I think for people who are in that type of profession, whether it's you're a social worker or you're a doctor, you're a nurse, when you're in that kind of serving profession, that can be a bit of a double-edged sword in that we're so focused on serving others that we forget to serve ourselves. And so part of me creating my life coaching business was because I recognized, like, you know what, I need to actually walk the walk and talk the talk. I need to talk about the things that I'm doing that can also help other people. But it was also too about creating those resources that I just felt lacked. And so my ability to manage better is because I do, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk now. And I love talking about, you know, ways in which I've kind of rectified my own teachings along the years. Because, you know, it does provide that humility to people when I'm talking to them, like, hey, I'm not perfect. And sometimes I do still fall into old habits and I do prioritize other people above me because I am a servant by nature. I do want to help others. I'm naturally empathetic. But now I have so many more tools to be able to stop and reflect and go, okay, I'm getting off track. Something's not in alignment with me. You know, I feel anxious today or I'm not rested today. And I can go back and actually correct the patterns. Whereas I wasn't doing that before. I wasn't allowing my space to even acknowledge that I had gone off the path, because that would have to involve me dropping my ego, which was hard at the time, right? I didn't want to see the ways in which I had gone wrong. Same with my journey as a new mom. You know, I wanted to be perfect at it. I wanted to feel like I was doing a good job, but there is no perfect way to do it. There isn't.
No. Perfection is, it's a fallacy. It's a myth. It's like one of those things where, if you want to, perfection is procrastination's ally. It's its strongest ally. Because when everyone goes for perfect, it's just like, okay, you never actually get off and get up and basically start doing what you need to do. You're like, it has to be perfect. And then it's like, oh no, it's not perfect. But
right, so I'm not
if I wait a little bit longer, or if I had this, then it'll be perfect. It's like, no, get out there, do it. But yeah, I have to ask, with all of this and now you becoming a life coach, what would you say has been one of the surprising tools to come out of your sort of experience over the last couple of years?
You mean tools that I'm offering to my clients or just for myself?
Tools you're offering to your clients, tools you may have picked up yourself. I'm always curious because both sides of things.
Absolutely. I think the flexibility was one of the biggest ones. And it's one that I talk about with clients every day. You made mention of the oak tree, right? So I kind of use the bamboo analogy with people where I say you have to be able to flex and regroup and pivot. And it's great to have a schedule. It's great to have a plan because that helps you kind of put those steps into motions. But when your plan doesn't go exactly how you want it to go, let's not stall and move forward. Let's be able to adapt, right?
Yeah.
And then the other thing that came out of my own journey, which I talk to clients about every day, is just having compassion for yourself. We are not perfect beings. We are not meant to walk a straight line and not stumble. And so the stumble is not going to be what is going to be a defining factor of your success, right? It's about if you're able to move forward. I talk about progress as opposed to perfection all the time.
Yeah.
And if I've taken anything from being able to coach other people in their journeys, it's being able to offer, my own personal experience in that and the humility that comes with that. I've grown so much by being able to express that humility, which is part of the reason why I do these, interviews, because talking about the own ways in which I've stumbled, the own ways in which I've completely broke is important. It's important for other people to hear it. It's important for people to know that you can come back from that and you can take control of your own mental health. And it's important for me to hear myself talk about it because through that, I build resiliency. I get to reflect on the ways in which I've overcome some of the darkest times of my life. And I'm okay, right? And I'm better for it, honestly. I like myself a lot better now than I did 3 years ago.
Yeah. I think with regards to using, say, something like these interviews as sort of self-reflection of moments you've had where it was tough or challenging, I think it's always a good thing to have these because one of the things I would say as human beings, we don't actually remind ourselves when we've overcome challenges, we often that happened. You forget about what you did, the sort of steps you went through to get overcome that, and you carry on with life. But if you were going, a next challenging moment comes up and you go, what did I do last time? Oh, I did this. I talked to this person. Is there a person similar to that who can help me with this? Or I did these steps and I came up with this plan. And maybe they move forward a little bit easier than they did last time, but we often just forget,
Yeah, that's the resiliency piece, right? When we're able to actually reflect on the times where we've continued to move forward and heal from those difficult times, we're much better equipped to deal with another difficult time that pops up because that's life, unfortunately, or fortunately, you could say. We can't control, what's going to come our way, but we have control in the steps that we take for how we take care of ourselves in those difficult times and really focusing on what matters.
Yeah. I am curious, if a person you knew as a social worker came to you now as a life coach, how would you be the same person in the same approach, or would there be some what would be the differences?
Mm-hmm. No, I think my approach has changed a lot, whether I'm talking to another social worker or I'm just talking to like an average Joe client. You know, I'm much more realistic now. I still use things that are, you know, evidence-based and research-based because I believe in the research behind certain strategies that I talk about with people. However, there's a practicality that sometimes is not included in the things that we talk about. You know, everybody's life circumstances are different and what they're going to be able to accomplish versus what I can accomplish or you can accomplish is different. And so when people come to me and they're talking about stressors at their job, there's not a lot that I can probably do to change what's happening in their workplace, for example, but I can change the way that they manage their stress, you know, and I can talk about healthy coping strategies for them and what is really patient-centered, meaning, you know, it's care planned around you and what you want to do. Whereas before, I think I used to just talk about, well, this is what you should do. This is what the research suggests you should do or what's most effective. But that's not really taking into account the person's own experience and what they want to do. And so I really try to talk to whoever it is, professional, not professional, as a human being, you know, taking into account what they want to work on, what's going to work for them, not what I think they should do. It's not about me. It's about you.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Interesting. Because like this is the thing. Yes. Previously, yeah, be more, much more of a generic blanket approach. Just like, hey, like insert square peg here, insert triangle peg here. And yes, you should be good, ready to go. But yeah, to go, hey, okay, insert, no, you're not really a square peg, but you're kind of not really a triangle. Oh, look, you're kind of like a house looking peg and stuff like this. And trying to like work that sort of solution to that person's needs must be kind of a lot more challenging. And like, has there been sort of times where it's been like, you're a bit of a puzzle, an enigma, a conundrum I can't really sort of get to at this present time? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I would be a disservice if I said that I can help every single person. You know, I don't have the tools to help every single person. And there have been people that have come along the way where I've said, you know what, I think we've done enough or as much as I can do for you. And now let's bring in, you know, this person or this person, if you're open to that, because here's where I think they could offer you a different lens or a different solution. And I love doing that. You know, that's part of my 9-to-5, we'll call it. I work in a doctor's office with a team of professionals, and I rely on their knowledge and their expertise because I don't know everything. I don't have every answer.
Yeah. Oh, it must be kind of different than basically going from a team, which you like can turn to and go, hey, team. Yeah. To like, basically, okay, hell, wait a second. I'm the only one here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so for my life coaching business, you know, I do free consults with people so we can kind of hash out what exactly they're needing from me so that I can actually honestly tell them if I'm the right person for them or not. Cause I don't want to promise them something that I can't deliver that wouldn't feel good with me.
Liking that a lot. Look, you're just like, it's like, of course. So with the life coaching, where do you want the sort of journey to go? And what sort of destination markers might there be in your head?
Oof, that's a really good question. I'm not sure totally how to answer that. I think about it a lot. But my passion, you know, for the coaching is really around, you know, coaching women, coaching mothers, coaching stepmothers who have lost their identity in that realm of constantly serving others. You know, we matter too. And lots of times we're the ones kind of sailing the ship. And if we go down, where's everybody else going to be? And we lose sight of that. We lose sight of how important it is for us to take care of ourselves because we are so empathetic and naturally caretaking of everybody else in our lives. And so it's about really walking alongside them as they figure out who they want to become and what feels good for them, and how do they prioritize themselves, and how do they make sure that they're putting the air mask on themselves, so to speak, before they help others. You know, they tell you that when they fly, put the air mask on yourself.
Yes.
Eventually, you know, I think I would love to have courses coming out and retreats coming out and working with people one-on-one in person again. I miss that. Everything's virtual right now. But my life coaching business is just kind of in the beginning stages of it. You know, it's something that I do in the evenings and on weekends. And so it's been intentional in the way that I've started that process, because I want to ensure that I'm not biting off more than I can chew, so to speak. You know, I want to make sure I'm fully present with my clients when I talk to them. And sometimes that's hard when you have four children who need you and a husband who needs you.
Yeah. Because I am very curious, because the time management skills must be off the hook, because four kids, husband, working, and you say a 9-to-5, but it's not what I would say a job which is going to be, hey, this is nice and easy. But doing consults, talking to people and everything like this. When do you breathe?
So I'm a big believer in micro breaks, and I plan my day for the most part in terms of my self-care. I don't really plan my day around, you know, work or things like that, because I already know how that's going to go.
Yeah.
But what I learned through my postpartum journey was how to like check in with myself. So right when I wake up in the morning, I'm kind of like, okay, Megan, you know, how are you feeling today?
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm great. Sometimes I'm fatigued. Sometimes I'm anxious. And if there's something on my table or on my plate, you know, so to speak, that's not urgent, then it's coming off the table, and I'm prioritizing myself so that I can start my day on a better note. And then, you know, when I get a lunch break again, how am I? I'm checking in with myself after my work day. How am I? I'm checking in with myself. So there's lots of things that I can put to the wayside that don't matter. I think that's what people don't always understand, and that we all have 24 hours in a day. How you use those 24 hours is up to you, and the moments in which you prioritize yourself and you don't prioritize the dishes or cleaning up the mess, or maybe you get Instacart as opposed to going to Walmart to pick up the groceries. Those things matter, because those are times where you're pouring into yourself. So I'm doing it all day long. All day long, I'm kind of checking with myself and making sure I'm okay.
Must be challenging, because you did mention helping ladies with identity. Basically knowing who you are, knowing who you are, checking in on who you are. Not this mother blob type thing, just going, hey, yes, I'm Megan, and this is it. I happen to be a wife, I happen to be a social worker, life coach. It must be to do that sort of reminding each day must be a challenge in itself.
Absolutely, it is. Absolutely. I think that's the other part that people don't understand, is that self-care is work. It is work. It's holding yourself accountable to put yourself on your priority list. And I say no a lot. So I know people think that I must not say no a lot, because I do wear so many different hats and my schedule sounds so busy. But what I'm choosing to do is coming from an authentic place. You know, I'm not saying yes to things that don't fill me up. I'm not anymore. I used to all the time. I used to say yes to the driving and the errands and the PTA meetings, because I had this expectation of who I thought I should be, not who I wanted to be. And that was a huge source of anxiety for me. You know, being a perfect mom looks like this, and being a perfect wife looks like this, a perfect stepmom looks like this. And so I had to reevaluate all of that and ask myself, am I saying yes to that because I actually want to do it, or because I think I should do it?
Would you also say it sort of tied in with some social prestige points as well? For yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I used to get really tied up in what other people thought of me. Right. And so, you know, at work, for instance, I used to take on the extra projects and, you know, orientating this new staff and having this student with me because I thought it looked good on me. Right. But really, it was grinding me into the ground, because I was doing way too much, but I wanted people to think like, oh my gosh, look at Megan, you know, she's an amazing social worker. She's a yes woman. She's always ready to help. I don't want to be identified as that person anymore. I don't. Now I want people to say, well, we should probably ask Megan what she wants to do, because I know she cares about her own well-being and I know that she cares about prioritizing herself. And if she says no, that's okay. But honestly, I really don't care what people think of me anymore. That might sound a little bit cold, but I really don't.
Like, this is the thing. I think people go, that sounds a little bit cold. But in, like, for myself, I go, no, like, I wouldn't say that's cold at all. I would say that's you being realistic and understanding you've got a certain amount of bandwidth, which you can only use in a day. By the time you've, like, juggled, like, all the kids, husband, like, job and everything like this, like, bandwidth for yourself is literally non-existent. Like, yeah, you're like, okay, everyone's asleep, okay, let me have this sort of hour or two, and it's not going to be an hour of two where I'm just going to chill by myself. It's like, okay, hour or two with, yeah, my beloved, like, how you doing, how, like, how's the day going? Fine, great. Yeah, how you doing? Fine, great. I'm going to sleep now. Okay. Yeah. And you know what I mean? For human beings, like, you know, like, when you're in, like, when you're younger, you're like, oh yeah, I need this time for myself so I can develop and grow and stuff like this. Like, every adult tells you, like, oh yeah, enjoy this moment, because, you know, when it comes, that time's not going to be there. Like, trying to keep on hold of that identity. Yeah, you do have to say no a lot. You have to, like, prioritize your bandwidth of your day. If you don't, as you've said in this conversation earlier, it doesn't lead you to a good place. It doesn't lead you to a positive place. At the end of it all, by the time you said yes to everyone and you've used up that bandwidth, you're no good to anyone eventually when you do finally can't function anymore. And I say this absolutely to everyone, no?
Absolutely. Again, you know, I don't think people really truly understand how much work it takes to be, you know, mentally well, physically well, have meaningful relationships, have a marriage that's, you know, working and successful, because all of that takes intention. And so if I'm pouring into everybody else and then my kids go to bed, but then I spend that extra 2 hours, you know, cleaning up the playroom, and then I hit the hay, you know, what time have I put into my relationship or the other things that are meaningful to me? And so when I reflect on my values and what I want my life to look like, that includes, you know, having a good marriage where we both feel supported, you know, having kids that have special, intentional one-on-one time with me, having a successful career. Those things don't happen without effort on my end and making sure that I'm okay. Because if I'm not okay and I'm riddled with anxiety, do you think that I'm going to have good interactions with my husband, or I'm going to be patient with my children, or I'm going to do a good job at work? Probably not. All those things are going to be, you know, pretty subpar. And people don't realize the way that our own mental health, you know, really affects every single facet of our functioning and all those relationships.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed it does. So, like, this is the thing. Like, when, like, you go, yeah, it takes intentional work. Like, people, like, go, okay, I've got this. I'll do this immediately. Like, would you say that's a recipe for working? Or, like, does it take a little bit more than just saying, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think it takes more than just saying, okay, I'm going to do this, right? It's like, so when are you going to do it? What time are you going to do it? What day are you going to do it? So in terms of, like, my marriage, you know, we're asking each other, we're checking in with each other. Like, this is our schedule. These are kind of our non-negotiables. We both have to go to work. We both have to get kids to hockey practice and gymnastics, but where's time for us in there? And some people are so opposed to that. It's so funny when I talk to clients about scheduling time with their spouse, they're like, that seems so, like, superficial or unorganic. And it's like, yeah, but if you don't make an agreement on it, then when is it going to happen?
Yeah.
If you're saying it's important to you, when are you going to put the time into it?
Yeah. It's like, it's not organic. It's
like, yeah, they're like, okay, I want my husband to just show up and whisk me away on a date. And it's like, well, that's is that even realistic when you have four children and two jobs and two cats and like.
Yeah, like this is like there is what's his name? There's a comedian over here in the UK, McIntyre, I believe. And like he talks about, yeah, he's in front of the whole crowd and it's like, yeah, he goes, yeah, any single people in here, and like you get hear the cheer and like, yeah, was any parents in here and you hear like a cheer, it's like you know, the difference between like single people and like married people with children, you can just get up and leave. You can get up and leave. Like, you can't do that when you've got kids. You gotta go, okay. It's like, all right. It's like, he's talking about juggling with his, like, one of his sons, yeah. The other son. And it's like, right. You're like, you're like, oh, you want to go out? Yes, let's go to this place. It's like,
exactly. So,
the whole sort of notion of not sort of planning time, I have to agree with you because, like, if you don't, you never will do it. And like, with regards to like, yes, time, you blink, 1 week goes by, 2 weeks, a month, before you know it's like 6 months. And you're like, oh, when was the last time we had time together?
Oh, totally. And even when I talk to clients about planning the time, you know, I never say to them, okay, so on Monday we'll start, or on the first of the month we start. I usually end the phone call with like, so when you hang up the phone, what are you doing when you hang up the phone? Because everybody says Monday, the first of the month, the new year is when they're going to start these new habits. And then it never happens. So I want somebody telling me, you know, what's one small change that you're going to do right when you hang up the phone? Do you have to do the dishes right now? Or can you go take a shower because you haven't showered in 3 days, right? It's like instantly the change needs to begin. And it doesn't have to be a huge change. Absolutely. It can be a small micro change. But I just want you to do it now. You know, get used to doing it without the perfect plan. Get used to doing it a bit messy. Just start.
One of the things I like say is, if you can change, like make a change in your life for the better, just 2% each and every single day. Like, it's just a case of 2%, 2%, 2%. 10 days go by, that's 20%. Yeah, there'll be times where you're gonna fall back, but by the time you get to like half a year, you're like, whoa, you've come a very long way. Obviously, like, people are like, oh, but you can't hit 2% all the time. You can't hit 2% all the time. You'll go up, you go down, but life, it's never a straight line of ups. It's up, downs, going around the circle, and yeah, falling off many a time. Mm-hmm. But that 2% commitment, if you can stick to that as much as you can each and every day, my God. Mm-hmm. You can make a real significant change to yourself.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm always saying, you know, progress and not perfection. Even when I have clients who are like, well, I want to hit the gym, you know, 4 times a week for an hour. Why? Like, we all ebb and flow in our energy levels, what we can take on day to day. And so if tomorrow you wake up and you're incredibly fatigued, but it's still important for you to move your body, why is it not okay for you to just go for a 10-minute walk and get some sunshine? Why is that not okay, but it's okay to go to the gym, right? And it's just about being flexible, reducing your expectations of yourself, because sometimes those high, unrealistic expectations are doing you a disservice, not helping you.
Yeah, no, like, I agree, because like, this is the thing. I also think sometimes people set real high expectations on themselves, so they can like, you know what, I didn't do it. It's their immediate sort of out, which is sort of programmed into their quote unquote process. So they're like, I set myself such a lofty goal and I didn't do it because of this, that, and the small excuses which take down that sort of huge like thing they like want to do. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, if they were like realistic and was like going, yeah, you know what, I want to go to a different city like 3 times in the year, it's like, okay, yeah, that's easy to do. You just do your plan. Yeah, can't go next week, but you've put in a date there. You'll go then, you put in another date. Yeah, put in another date. But it's doable. When someone goes, I want to travel around the world. And it's like, So, okay, if they, depending where they are in their lives, if they are, a young buck running out there like a, it can be done, but it's, you know what I mean? But as to each sort of like stage goes by, And if it's like, I've got two kids and I want to do this, you know, are you really going to do it? Or is it just something you'd like to say?
And is that even realistic? Right. And so that's why comparing yourself to what someone else is doing is not helpful, because everybody's life circumstances are different. So sure, maybe my neighbor can get to the gym 4 days a week because they live alone and have a flexible schedule. It's not as doable for me, but that doesn't mean that I can't do something, can't carve out some time for myself. So when people have such extreme thinking like that, well, I have to hit this goal, otherwise it's just not going to work. That's where they kind of fall short a bit, right? It's like, well, A, I think your goal was a bit high and unrealistic. And that doesn't mean that it's not going to work for you. It just means that we need to talk about the process in which you're going to get there, like really kind of starting at baby steps. But people don't always like the notion of baby steps because they feel like, well, I should be able to do more. Who said that? I didn't say that. Who said that you should be able to do more? And then they just don't even start, right? Because that expectation is so unrealistic and high that they're just defeated. They're defeated before they even begin.
I hear that a lot. But like, this is the thing. I have to ask this question. It's going to be like one of the last few questions I'm going to ask you. But like, you can change it slightly. What has been one of the more unrealistic goals someone has come to you with as a life coach?
Oh my gosh, yeah, there's been lots. There's been lots, you know. I'll talk about one recently, which was a new mom, and it was not even about her motherhood journey, but more so the relationship with her partner and how she was expecting him to support her. And her expectations were like, well, I just want him to offer me a break. I want him to know that I'm exhausted. I want him to, you know, just come and take the baby. And I said, like, where does that expectation even come from? And she said, well, we've been together for 10 years. He should know what I need. And I just said to her, like, I don't care if you've been together for 10 years or 10 minutes. Nobody can know exactly what you need. So if your goal is that you're expecting him to read your mind, it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. So what's wrong with you communicating to your partner and saying, when you get home from work, I would really appreciate it if you would take the baby so that I can go and shower. Can we make that a plan? Can we make it a plan, right? So it's like, you've communicated it. You both agreed upon it. Everybody knows what they should be doing. But it was just like this notion that he should just know what she needs.
Yeah, no, but like, this is the thing. It's like, you have been together for 10 years. But if you've been together for 10 years and there has not been any other humans in that like relationship, it's going to be totally different when you introduce a small like bundle of a joy, which doesn't negotiate. It knows what it wants. And like, it's like, always on.
Absolutely.
So it's like, not knowing the difference between that is interesting. I find that fascinating, because it's just like, people expect it to be one way, but they don't actually acknowledge the huge change which has actually happened in their lives. It's going to be different. It's not going to be the same. Like, there are going to be new sort of stresses which just blow your mind in so many different ways, which you can't actually fathom.
And I mean, sometimes people come to me with a goal, and it's not that the goal is unrealistic, but they just have no plan around how they're going to achieve that goal. I had one guy say to me, well, I want to be financially free in 5 years. I was like, awesome. You know, that's a great goal.
Yeah.
But, like, what are you prepared to do to actually accomplish that goal? So we kind of ran through his finances a bit because, you know, again, I'm a social worker, so I have experience helping people with that. But, and I just said, well, like, you know, here's an option. Are you prepared to do that? He's like, well, no. Okay. Well, are you prepared to do this? Well, no. So one of the options was, you know, are you prepared to sell your house because your house is paid off and you can downsize into a condo? You're a single guy. What do you need a big house for? And he was like, well, no. Like, okay, well, but you told me you want to be here, but you're not telling me how you're going to get there. And of course, my job is to give you some options of how you can get there, but you're not really prepared to do any of them. So the goal of being financially free in 5 years seems pretty unrealistic then. Maybe we need to look at 10 years.
Yeah, no, like this. Another problem what perplexes me is like, yeah, people don't like, when you like go financially free 5 years, like, you know what I mean? It's a, like, you go, wow, that is, it's a tough goal. It's possible depending on what sort of setup you've got before you go into that. Or even if you don't have anything, it comes down to what are you willing to sacrifice to get yourself there? If he's not willing to sell his home, if he's not willing to make any sacrifices or any sort of concessions with what his lifestyle is right now, like, it's like, yeah, you'll never get there in 5 years. You'll never get there in 10 years. You'll never get there in 20 years, depending on what, like, your finances are. Like, it's like, yes, when you're going along, you've got to sometimes just let go of things of the past to, like, embrace things of the future, you know?
Yeah, and that's when I'm having those hard conversations with people where I'm telling them, I can't help you. Only you can help you. You know, I've given you some solutions, but I actually can't do the work for you.
Yeah.
Same thing when people like want me to give them motivation. I can't give you motivation. I really can't. I can't drag you out of your bed in the morning to go for the walk. I can't stop you when you're hitting the drive-through and buying dinner instead of cooking dinner. You know, you have to do that. It comes down to discipline. Motivation comes when people are actually following through with the steps and now they're seeing the benefits and now they're like, oh, this feels good. You know, I have a surplus of money in my bank account, or I'm more energized, I'm sleeping better, my mood is improved. And then they want to keep going because they're seeing the results. But in the beginning, it's a lot of discipline.
Discipline. Love it. Love it. One last thing. Now, if there was anything you could do tomorrow, just a free day of no responsibility, what would that day look like?
This day might sound really boring to people, but I would have nobody in my house. Everybody would be gone. And I would just sit in silence and relax. Honestly, I am someone who craves silence. I need silence. I'm naturally introverted by nature, which is a huge shock to most people because I talk for a living. But, you know, people drain my energy for the most part. And so I require silence to, you know, fill my cup back up. And I very rarely get it because we're in a pandemic and everybody is home. So yeah, I would just be silent. I would, you know, do self-care. I would take a bath. I would make a meal for myself without having to, you know, feed my kids off my plate. Just be in solitude. That's like the ideal day for me.
A day of solitude.
Yeah. It wouldn't have anybody touching me or wanting to, you know, hug me or, yeah.
Oh.
Every mom listening to this is like, yep, I agree.
One day of solitude. Hey, you know what? I think I can make that happen for you. Yeah, you know what I mean? One day of solitude. Brilliant. Love it. Leave me alone. Brilliant. I have to say, Megan, it has been a pleasure to have you on today. You have been a superstar, and yes, I look forward to getting you back on sometime in the future. Yes, and no doubt.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been so great speaking with you. I so appreciate you taking the time to to connect, and it was a wonderful conversation.
The joy is all mine. Yes, yes. Can you tell the lovely people how they can find you out there on the interwebs?
Yes. So I'm all over the place. You can find me on Instagram, on Facebook. I have a website for my private coaching company, MeganMcLarenCoaching.com. And so I like to have some fun with social media. You'll see that I'm on there sometimes doing videos, some serious, some not so serious, and also providing, you know, free tips and strategies and information on how you can better take control of your mental health.
Perfect. Perfect. I'll put all of this into the description down below. So please seek her out. yeah, not all at once. Give her that day of solitude. Then again, she might like just ignore you. But that's another story. So let me just say this to you, my friends, my life warriors, you stuck with us up until this point. Please stay safe, stay well, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic, be all the positive things you can be in this world, and then some. Have a great day, guys. Stay well. Peace. And we are